It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headlines.
U.S. says Ukraine rebels gain advanced weaponry and other assistance from outside. Thai Army seals off key intersection in Bangkok. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. The White House says Thursday's shootdown of a government helicopter by pro-Russian separatists in Ukraine indicates rebels have access to advanced weaponry and other assistance from outside. White House spokesman Jay Carney comments came just hours after Ukraine's acting president said rebels downed the aircraft with a shoulder-launch missile. He said 14 servicemen, including a general, died in the attack near the flashpoint eastern city of Slavonsk. Separately, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry raised concerns Thursday with his Russian counterpart about the ongoing violence and about reports of foreign fighters crossing into Ukraine from Russian territory. Hundreds of government troops sealed off busy intersections in Thailand's capital, Bangkok, Thursday to prevent a protest planned by those who object to last week's military coup. Truckloads of soldiers blocked all incoming roads to the city's Victory Monument in a massive show of force during the busy evening rush hour, but few protesters were seen in the area and many street vendors closed up shop early. The large army deployment came one day after hundreds of protesters gathered at Victory Monument with troops. When troops showed up, scuffles broke out. Water bottles and other objects were hurled at soldiers, and a green army vehicle was vandalized with graffiti reading, "No coup, get out." Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan says his government will continue to do everything possible to bring home more than 200 schoolgirls who were kidnapped by Boko Haram last month. In a recorded speech released Thursday, Mr. Jonathan noted it had been 45 days since the horrifying abduction took place. He expressed solidarity with the families of the abductees. He pledged to wage a total war against terrorism and said he had instructed his security force to use any lawful means necessary to end the impunity of terrorists on Nigerian soil. You can follow this story at voanews.com. Former Egyptian Army Chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi has won a landslide victory in his presidential bid against his rival Hamdine Sabahi. Preliminary results from the three-day vote, which ended Wednesday, give Sisi more than 93% of the ballots cast. Sabahi, who received just 3%, conceded defeat, saying he would accept the will of the people. A rogue army general in Libya has resumed airstrikes against Islamist militias in the east of the country. Western officials have voiced fears the violence could degenerate into a civil war as rival factions fight for power 3 years after the overthrow of former leader Muammar Gaddafi. The U.S. economy contracted in the first 3 months of this year, battered even more than first thought by an unusually harsh winter. The government said Thursday the world's largest economy dropped at an annual rate of 1% in the January to March period, the first downturn in 3 years. An earlier estimate said the U.S. economy had advanced in the first quarter by a minuscule 0.1%. The contraction reflected slower stockpiling by businesses, reduced exports, and a cutback in local and state government spending. The Vatican has said June 8th is the day Pope Francis will host the Israeli and Palestinian presidents in a prayer for peace. Shimon Peres and Mahmoud Abbas accepted the Pope's invitation to a joint prayer meeting when Francis visited the Middle East earlier this week. Flying back to the Vatican, Francis said the two leaders are showing the courage to move forward. In Washington, I'm Bill Michaels.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. West African leaders meet today, Friday, amid threats to regional peace and stability posed by Boko Haram.
President John Mahama, in his capacity as chair of the ECOWAS Authority of Heads of State and Government, has invited and convened an extraordinary session for this Friday, the 30th of May.
Ben Dutsi Malo is spokesperson for Ghanaian President John Mahama. The movement to bring back the Nigerian schoolgirls says people should not play politics with their abduction. Egypt's former army chief wins a landslide presidential vote, and Malawi's Electoral Commission is set to announce final results of the country's May 20th presidential vote, barring any court intervention.
All along, the Democratic Progressive Party, DPP, has maintained that regardless of few irregularities, but by and large, the elections have been free, fair, and credible.
Nicholas Dawusi is the National Publicity Secretary for the Opposition Democratic Progressive Party of Malawi. A rogue general resumes airstrikes as chaos grips Libya, and Kenya prepares to host the United Nations first assembly on the environment next month. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Heads of state and government of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, convened an extraordinary summit today, Friday, in the Ghanaian capital, Accra, following an invitation from President John Dramani Mahama, who is also chairman of ECOWAS. Ghana's presidential spokesperson, Ben Dutsi Malau, says high on the agenda is regional peace and stability following the abduction of over 200 Nigerian schoolgirls by Boko Haram Islamist militants.
President John Mahama, in his capacity as chair of the ECOWAS Authority of Heads of State and Government, has invited and convened an extraordinary session for this Friday, the 30th of May, for all the leaders of ECOWAS to gather to meet here in Accra, Ghana. We'll have some discussions on some issues of mutual and urgent concern, particularly concerning the sub-region of West Africa.
There have been concerns about the violent insurgency carried out by militant group Boko Haram. Will heads of state look at some of these issues of stability and peace in the West African sub-region?
I can confirm that the West African leaders will be dealing with a range of issues of mutual concern, of urgent concern, issues that are in the prerogative of the leaders to discuss. Of course, peace and security is one thing President Mahama committed to when he spoke on being elected to become chair of the ECOWAS Authority of Heads of State. Peace and security, how to strengthen that, how to bring the whole region together in that context. Yes, that's one of the things they will discuss. Another thing that is very important is a focus on infrastructural projects within the region. For example, the Lagos-Accra-Abidjan highway project, which will then facilitate and ease the movement of goods and people across the region. That is one thing. And again, we have the West African gas pipeline that is connecting several countries in the region. This is something. So those are some of the things.
I heard President Mahama also promised President Goodluck Jonathan about the regional groupings' support and solidarity in the fight against these militant groups. Will these heads of state possibly discuss issues of cooperation, about coordinating intelligence sharing and gathering as part of an effort to stabilize these regions?
Let me just mention that President Mahama actually brought to Accra, Ghana, just a few days back, the intelligence chiefs of ECOWAS, who met here and interacted to take decisions exactly about intelligence sharing so that they can strengthen that ability to share information, share it in a timely manner, so that certain situations of insecurity and instability can be prevented instead of them being dealt with after the fact.
Ben Dasimalar is Ghana's presidential spokesperson. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Accra. Nigeria's government is accusing the political opposition of exploiting the issue of the more than 200 kidnapped schoolgirls for political gain. But members of the Bring Back Our Girls protest movement say the allegations are an attempt to distract from finding the girls and reuniting them with their families. Viewers and Luke reports from Abuja.
Don't play politics with the girls. That's something you hear from all sides of this crisis in Nigeria. Authorities accuse the opposition of backing the Bring Back Our Girls movement to make the president look bad ahead of next year's election. The government's inability to halt the now five-year insurgency in the Northeast will likely be a key campaign issue. Activists say the government sent a group of, quote, thugs and hooligans to disrupt their rally in Abuja Wednesday, snatching phones and purses and smashing plastic chairs. The coordinator of the Bring Back Our Girls movement, Hadiza Bala Usman, had this to say.
We have no political intonation. Is this the question is about the Chibok girls? What is Nigerian government to be doing about their rescue? Where are we on it? It's 44 days now. So the distraction about trying to insinuate that the movement is being driven by politics is what we question. Why would you? The point is, let's talk about the Chibok girls.
Boko Haram militants grabbed 276 teenage schoolgirls from their dormitory in the northeastern town of Chibok. Some escaped, but 219 girls are still missing. At a rally Thursday in Abuja, the several hundred people gathered repeated the movement's mantra.
What are we demanding?
Bring back our girls now and tonight.
What are we asking?
The truth, nothing but the truth.
What are we demanding?
Bring back our girls.
What are we asking?
The truth. Nothing but the truth.
The movement's rallies tend to be small, just a couple hundred people many days. But they also launched the social media campaign about a month ago that got the world and the Nigerian government talking about the Chibok girls. The movement's leaders say they spurred authorities into action. The presidency tells VOA that it has been on the case from day one, but didn't have time to, quote, dance to emotions. Nigeria's military now says it knows where the girls are, but that a military rescue would be too dangerous. President Goodluck Jonathan says he will not barter with militants for the girls. It's an impasse that has left many here wondering what the third option is, if both force and negotiations are ruled out. And look, VOA News, Abuja.
The Malawi High Court is expected to rule today, Friday, whether the results of the May 20th presidential election should be announced or a recount should be held. With about a third of the votes counted, opposition Democratic Progressive Party DPP candidate Peter Mutharika is leading with 42% of the unofficial tally. But Malawi Congress Party presidential candidate Lazarus Chakwera, who is in second place, has gone to court along with third place candidate President Joyce Banda to demand a recount. Meanwhile, Malawi's Electoral Commission Chair Maxon Mbandera said late Thursday that he will announce the final results today, Friday, barring any court intervention. DPP Publicity Secretary Nicholas Dawusi tells me his party wants the results announced and Peter Mutharika declared winner.
All along, the Democratic Progressive Party, DPP, has maintained that regardless of few irregularities, but by and large, the elections have been free, fair, and credible. That's why we have argued the Malawi Electoral Commission to announce the results as per constitutional and statutory requirement. Therefore, next announcement today that the elections were free, fair, and credible gives credence and gives credit to our already stand where we insisted that, yes, there might be some few grievances, but according to our laws, let Malawi Electoral Commission announce the results, the winner be known. Therefore, we are very pleased that Malawi Electoral Commission has qualified the elections as credible.
So what does this mean now to the decision to recount the ballots?
From the way to go, we thought we cannot do the recount because, as we have been saying, there wasn't any care and custody of the ballot papers and ballot boxes. the safety and security of ballot boxes and ballot papers was not assured. Most of the ballot boxes and ballot papers are being found strewn across the country. The few ballot papers had no serial numbers where you can counter-check and cross-check. In view of these irregularities, we thought the recount could not reflect the real things on the ground, and the question of recount is not there.
The Electoral Commission is saying that unless otherwise the court says something, it is prepared to announce the results today, Friday. What do you expect?
According to the law and according to the statutory requirements, according to our own legal rules, I think the Malawi Electoral Commission is bounded by the law for them to make sure that they have announced the results. So we expect Malawi Electoral Commission to announce the final results of the presidential election.
And do you expect that the commission will declare your party the victor?
Well, let's wait and see. But in view of the unofficial results, we believe that our presidential candidate, Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika, has been leading since the determination and the counting of ballot boxes started. So I don't think that any party can overturn that. We expect the Malawi Electoral Commission to do the official announcement.
Nicholas Dawusi is the National Publicity Secretary for the Opposition Democratic Progressive Party of Malawi. He was speaking with me from Lilongwe. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 30th. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. Egyptian officials say preliminary results gave former Egyptian army chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi a sweeping victory in his presidential bid against Hamdi Sabahi. But as viewers Elizabeth Arid reports from Cairo, the vote has raised many questions about a Sisi presidency.
Small crowds Thursday celebrated the early results of Egypt's presidential election, which gave former army chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi a crushing lead over his sole competitor. Given a crackdown on opposition forces, few questioned an early tally showing Sisi with more than 90% of the vote. How many people voted is another matter. Initial turnout was so low, the government added an extra day of voting and threatened non-voters with fines. Officials said participation jumped Wednesday, although many polls that third day were empty. Despite cries of foul play and little independent monitoring of the vote count, Sisi supporters came to his defense.
Thank God these elections were legitimate. No oil or sugar were given out. No money was given out. No forging of the ballots occurred. These elections are legitimate.
Sisi had gained support from many weary of 3 years of post-revolution upheaval. Among those yearning for some sense of calm are many of Egypt's minority Christians who had feared the influence of the Muslim Brotherhood. Sisi helped depose its member, President Mohamed Morsi, last year.
We always pray for that. The church always prays for the security and the stability of the country.
But Sisi has not only his political nemesis, the Brotherhood, to worry about. Egypt's economy is in tatters. Patience is wearing thin, and harder times with potential subsidy cuts loom. Even supporters voice concern about the future.
This difficult phase is Sisi's phase. It is a building Egypt phase, a social justice phase, a phase where we have to look at the poor and misfortunate of Egypt, the people who live in graveyards. Sisi has to care for the impoverished of Egypt.
But with new doubts about the breadth of Sisi's support and a possible backlash about the vote count, Egypt's president may face great challenges in rallying Egyptians for the sacrifices he says lie ahead. Final results are expected early next week. Elizabeth Arrett, VOA News, Cairo.
A rogue army general in Libya has resumed airstrikes against Islamist militias in the east of the country. Western officials have voiced fears the violence could degenerate into civil war as rival factions fight for power 3 years after the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi. Henry Richwell reports for VOA from London.
Witnesses say warplanes launched at least two missile strikes on jihadist bases Thursday near the eastern city of Benghazi. It is the latest in a series of assaults led by former general Khalifa Haftar against Islamist militants. In a statement last week, Haftar claimed he was leading Libya's army to restore stability 3 years after the ouster and death of Muammar Gaddafi.
بموجب هذا البيان رغبة الجيش الوطني.
Haftar said the desire of the National Army is the continuity of civilian life, the stability of political life and security in Libya. In reality, Haftar does not lead any National Army, says Libya analyst Jason Pack of Cambridge University and president of LibyaAnalysis.com.
What Khalifa Haftar calls a National Army is yet another militia, which he has branded or named the National Army. But what he has done is been so audacious in reaching out to this anti-Islamist segment of the Libyan population.
That support is growing. In recent days, street demonstrations have broken out in Tripoli and Benghazi in support of General Haftar. Among the supporters was Sheikh Mohammed Lamin. He says this stand is for the country, for saving what is left of the country's dignity and also supporting the army and police so they can eliminate criminals and outlaws. Haftar served under Muammar Gaddafi before defecting to the United States in the 1980s. He denies widespread claims he was trained by the CIA. Again, analyst Pack.
Libyans remember both his CIA connections and his Gaddafi connections. And when he tried to insert himself into the rebel leadership in 2011, when the uprising began, he was never taken seriously. He's a man who wants to hold power so much that he's playing whatever circumstance exists to his benefit.
Forces loyal to Haftar carried out a rocket attack on Libya's parliament earlier this month. Haftar claims the Islamist-dominated parliament supports the jihadist militias. A new cabinet was sworn in this week, despite an opposition boycott and legal challenges. New Prime Minister Ahmed Maiteeg vowed to prevent Libya from fragmenting. Mr. Maiteeg said the new ministers would strive in every way to fight terrorism and fight to build the institutions of the police and army. The United States has urged all its citizens to leave Libya immediately. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Kenya is expected to host the first United Nations Environment Assembly next month. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, world environmentalists, government officials and lobby groups will be discussing how the international community can address environmental challenges facing the planet. Mohammed Yusuf has more for VOA from Nairobi.
Speaking to reporters in Nairobi, Akim Shtana, head of the UN Environment Programme, says experts in finance, social sciences, law and development will take part in the UNEP meeting, which will aim to shape a global agenda for improving the environment on issues as diverse as climate change and illegal trade in wildlife products.
In terms of the substantive focus of the United Nations Environment Assembly, there are two themes that ministers will focus on in particular. One is the theme of sustainable development goals, including sustainable consumption and production.
Shtana says the Environment Assembly will address the dichotomy split between environmental sustainability on the one hand and economic and social development on the other. He promised the meetings in Nairobi will provide governments with the science and policy options to help guide them, as well as a platform for international cooperation. The UNEP director acknowledged that environmental challenges around the world are weighty issues that require input from all member states and partners. The assembly is expected to tackle the growing problem of illegal wildlife trade, which has been aggravated in East Africa by a sharp rise in poaching and other environment-related crimes. Kenya's permanent representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Martin Kimani, notes Kenya's keen interest in the debate over how to suppress illegal poaching.
This, as you know, is a crucial matter for us. Our country has its challenges in this regard, but there are challenges that everyone from the president on downward have met very robustly.
Kimani says Kenya needs global endorsement of its efforts to enforce international agreements restricting trade in prohibited wildlife products, but also broad cooperation. Increasing demand from East Asian countries like China and Thailand, where ivory is believed to have medical properties, has led to a sharp increase in poaching in Kenya and neighbouring Tanzania. Kenyan officials say they recovered more than 13 tons of ivory last year at the port city of Mombasa alone. The government has deployed more game wardens to protect Kenya's elephant and rhino population. More stringent penalties for poaching and illegal wildlife trading now include lengthy prison terms and fines of more than $200,000. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Kenya's AFC Leopards play Ethiopia's Defense as Sudan's El Merrek face Burundi's Academy Chite at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's SECAFA Nile Basin Tournament quarterfinals in Khartoum, Sudan, today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Uganda's Victoria University play Tanzania mainland's Mbeya City as Sudan's El Ahli Shandi face South Sudan's Malakia. Meanwhile, Paraguay edged Cameroon 2-1 in Kaufstein, Austria, on Thursday. Today, Friday, Chile host Egypt, Iran play Angola, and New Zealand welcome South Africa. Tomorrow, Saturday, Croatia host Mali, Colombia play Senegal, Algeria meet Armenia, and Netherlands engage Ghana. Elsewhere, the Comoro Islands host Kenya as South Sudan welcome Mozambique in Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Sierra Leone play Swaziland, Guinea-Bissau engage Central African Republic, Uganda play Madagascar as Rwanda meet Libya. On Sunday, Botswana host Burundi, Equatorial Guinea meet Mauritania, Chad face Malawi, Benin play Sao Tome and Principe, Congo-Brazzaville engage Namibia as Zimbabwe tackle Tanzania and Lesotho host Liberia. In Botswana, Egypt have bagged 34 gold, 14 silver and 23 bronze medals to take the lead at the top of the medal table at the Africa Youth Olympic Games in Gaborone on Thursday. South Africa is second, Nigeria is third, followed by Algeria, Tunisia, Ethiopia, Botswana, Kenya, Mauritius and Madagascar are 10th among 37 countries on the medal table. Finally, in athletics, Nigerian long jumper Blessing Okagbare and Ethiopian 5,000-meter runners Yeneo Aliamireo and Gehagos Gebrehiwet lead Africa's campaign on day one at the IAAF Diamond League in Eugene, Oregon State, United States of America, today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Okagbare and Ivory Coast's Muriel Lahore run the women's 200 meters. South African Simon Magakwe runs the men's 100 meters. Kenyan Bedan Karoki and Eritrean Tekle Mariam Mehdin run the men's 10,000 meters. As Tunisia's Habiba Gribi, Ethiopia's Sofia Sefa, and Kenyan Milka Chemos Chewa go for the women's 3,000 meters steeplechase. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we look forward to your report again on Monday. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, May 30th.
The argument whether former President Olusegun Obasanjo informed or took permission from the incumbent president, Goodluck Jonathan, before intervening in the effort to bring back the missing Chibok children, vis-à-vis negotiations or non-negotiation with the state, is irrelevant. What matters to us Nigerians is that the girls come back alive and sound. Again, I say, remove politics from this, or else Nigerians will react from 2015. I am Okechukwu Ajaka of Ezo Rita family, Onitsha-Ado Kingdom, Anambra State, southeast of Nigeria. Thank you, VOA.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Malawi's President Joyce Banda says she will step down without a fight if the country's high court rules against her in last week's disputed election. The high court is set to rule today, Friday, whether the results of the election should be made public or a recount should be held. Former Egyptian army chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi has won a landslide victory in his presidential bid against rival Hamdi Sabahi. That's it for this Friday, May 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, I'm Kim Lewis.
And I'm Yehiyas Wuhib.
Together we host the Voice of America's informative program, Africa News Tonight.
We present a thorough summary of the day's events, featuring interviews with newsmakers in Africa and the world.
Also, Sunny Young drops in live with sports, and we have features on science, health, and business.
Tune in Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOANews.com.